This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
The sleep of reason gives birth to monsters.
Hi, my name's Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, post-apocalyptic wasteland, kung fu, and women in prison movies from the 1960s to today. Check us out at reallyawfulmovies.com, part of the Crypt TV family.
Welcome to this special episode of the Really Awful Movies Podcast, episode 60B, an interview with Christian Burgess, programmer for the Toronto After Dark Film Festival.
So, we're talking with Christian Burgess, who's a programmer for the Toronto After Dark Film Festival. How are you doing, Christian?
Good, Jeff. How are you? Thank you.
I'm doing very well. Big fan of the festival. We're looking forward to this year's edition. It's held October 15th to 23rd. And I wanted to ask you, before we get into, you know, this year's festival, this festival is going on since 2006, correct?
That's right. Yep, that's right.
Well, tell me a bit about the genesis of the After Dark Film Festival.
Well, ironically, I didn't start out working for Toronto After Dark. I got involved in it at a later date. I think it was 2008. It's been so long now, I can't remember. However, I've known the festival since it began. I actually worked for a company that sponsored it in its first year. So that's how I caught wind of it. I was like, oh, what's this? A new Toronto After Dark. Catchy name. Oh, it's genre films, which I like. So something new, because in Toronto, annually, there's about 75, 80 film festivals a year, which is crazy when you think about it. And it sort of clicked with me personally, because apart from that, I pretty much knew TIFF and maybe a couple other ones, but I didn't know there's not that many. Mm-hmm. But, I went as a fan. Movies spoke to me. It's something that I like. So I went, and then I just got to know Adam and got involved, and then here I am working for it.
So, of course, that's Adam Lopez, who's the founder of the festival.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Adam started it. Basically, you have to maybe interview him one day. You know, he's a swamp right now. But the genesis, from what I understand, what Adam started it, is that he's kind of been a film fan his entire life. And when he's from England, and when he moved to Canada, he thought, you know, he made apparently a lot of short films and, you know, kind of a wannabe filmmaker in the UK. But he's like, I'm never going to make films for a living, you know, of course. So what's the next best thing I can do? Well, I'll start my own film festival. So he spent a lot of... Adam is very meticulous with his research. And he spent about 2 years talking to other film festivals, other film festival programmers, just trying to get an idea of what's out there in Toronto, what's the general consensus from moviegoers, what they're looking for, that kind of thing. And that's how basically Toronto After Dark was born in a nutshell. A lot of research and a lot of hard work, and here we are celebrating our 10th year.
Mm-hmm. And I remember when the first year came around, I mean, I was super excited because I'm a huge fan of Chroma and Lloyd Kaufman. And in addition to the films that were programmed, one of the ones I did see in the first year was Behind the Mask, The Rise of Leslie Vernon.
Yep.
That was great. And there was also the Make Your Own Damn Movie Masterclass hosted by Lloyd Kaufman.
Oh, wow.
Which was, yeah, kind of how in conjunction with the Film Fest. And it was great. I mean, this was something... of course, with TIFF, you know, we have Midnight Madness and everything. But there's something from the very beginning that I found a little bit more... I don't know. How should we say, Meg? Audience accessible, I think, about After Dark.
I agree.
Yeah.
It's sort of very... We like to call it a fan-driven film festival because a lot of the people that work for Toronto Dark are fans, and we've got to know a lot of our audience members because they're very loyal every year. They come up each year. They kind of trust our programming. They know what's kind of in store every year. And there's something about, it's sort of very personal. Is that a good word? I don't know. It's very grounded. It's not, mm-hmm. you know, it's not a very corporate event. You know, we're very independent. We run a very strict budget. We don't have corporate donations up the butt and things like that. It's a very, like, we do our pub nights every night.
Yep.
Where, mm-hmm. you know, not only audience members can go over and have a drink. touring, but filmmakers come over as well, and people who work for the festival, and we just, it's very, very casual, very social, and that's one thing I really like about it. It's just like going to a movie.
Well, that was one thing that really impressed me. I remember when Adam came on stage and introduced the movie, and then said, well, yeah, afterwards, come to the pub and join us, and I was like, oh, wow, you know, that never happens at TIFF, you know? So that was something right away that impressed me.
As much as I'd love to have a pint with, like, Michael Fassbender, I just don't think that'll happen. But no. You never know.
Unless you happen to be at the same bar as him and just, you know, sing on the bar stool right next to him, you know, by happenstance.
Yeah,
right?
I heard he's a really nice guy. I know one of my friends does reviews for another thing, and he's apparently he's a really cool guy. But, you know, it's spending people in that typical environment. TIFF is not it's a different environment versus how they're two completely different ways of doing, like, TIFF is a corporate, you know, it's a huge epic. I don't know logistically how they put that thing on. We're just like a little festival, but I'm really proud of our festival because we're really well known throughout the world. Like, people know us, they know of our festival every year, and it's very humbling to know that the work that we put in and our fans that keep us going every year, it's paid off. It's really, really nice, and our team is fantastic. So everything chives together. It's really, really great.
And it's something really cool as well. I mean, for somebody like me who's a genre fanatic, I mean, you know, I always, around this time, I start to wonder, oh, I wonder what's going to be playing at Toronto After Dark this year, you know? And then when you start to, you know, when the announcements start to trickle out, you know, all of a sudden I'm like, oh, yeah, no, I heard of that one, and I'm excited for that one, and so on and so forth. So, I mean, there's always, always great movies to be seen. Now, of course, the mandate of the fest, I mean, it's basically, you know, horror, sci-fi, action, cult, genre cinema. Correct? I want to ask you, what as a programmer, what is the selection process like?
Very difficult. It's kind of hard to complain about watching movies for a few months. But there's five programmers on our team, including Adam. There's Stephen Landry, Peter Kaplowski, Justin McConnell, Adam Lopez, and myself. And we've had a few people come and go over the years, but right now it's just the five of us. I'm the programming manager. I kind of inherited this position from Steven. Steven used to do this job. My primary job every year is to, I take care of all the blind submissions. All the films that are submitted to Toronto After Dark, the features, our submissions are open in, I'll keep track of the dates, around May, end of April, May, something like that. And through the course of the summer, our final deadline is the end of July, and then we start narrowing everything down. But my primary job is to go through all our blind submissions. But at the same time, the rest of the programming team is looking for stuff that interests us, and we also go, a couple of them go to other film festivals, including myself. We go, usually go to Fantasia every year. A lot of films play there, and it's a good way to, you know, get the word out. We also reach out to the programmers at other film festivals to see what's, you know, movies that the festival itself might pass on, not necessarily because it's a bad film or something that they didn't like, but just maybe it didn't fit the festival. It's a good way to kind of just figure out what is going on, because one thing that's not a shortage of every year is films. There is plenty of them out there that are produced every year. And we just have programming meetings on a regular basis. We're usually about once every 3 to 4 weeks. At the beginning, it's a little bit more involved because we have to plan out our, you know, our summer kind of thing. And then just narrowing everything down. And then we communicate, because I don't live in Toronto, I live in Burlington. So I live, everyone else lives in Toronto, like Adam lives in North Toronto, everyone else lives from downtown, I think. But, you know, there's something called email and phone calls and things like that. So it's a good way to compare notes, and we kind of pass it around. Like, if there's something that I like and I feel that, that I feel is, I need a second opinion on, or I feel that these guys are my other programmers should watch it. You know, could you guys check out this film? And I usually write a few notes on it and give them links to trailers. I basically sell them on something that I think they should see. And then they watch it, and then usually we discuss these things at our meeting. But one thing I do love about our programming team is that we've got different tastes. So it's interesting to hear what Steven likes as opposed to what I like or Justin likes, and Adam chimes in at the end. It's kind of interesting because we're all kind of quirky in our own kind of way, and it makes for very interesting and also very heated programming meetings, because when we're narrowing everything down, which is a very difficult process, believe it or not,
I can imagine that.
It makes, you know, there's something that I like, but Adam might not like, and then because you get some films that a certain parameter will champion.
Right.
They really believe in it. But maybe just because of a certain thing, it doesn't click with the festival. Not necessarily because it's a bad film. But ultimately, Adam makes his decisions for what he feels is right for the festival. But it's based on a lot of input from the program team, plus his own opinions, of course.
And on average, how many submissions do you get per year?
The last 2 years, I've noticed, I've been program manager for 2 years. I've been a programmer for, since 2011. Last year, we set a record. It's including short films. I think last year, we broke 600.
Wow.
And this year, and we're going to break that record this year with about, including short films again, I think we broke about 650, 700. It's a little bit more than last year. So, and like short films are, like, I don't do the short film programming. Peter Kapowski does that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, like, it's amazing to see the amount of stuff being produced. Like, people still make movies, whether it's features or shorts, but it's something that's really awe-inspiring. And it's wonderful. There's a lot of creative, wonderful folk out there worldwide, not just, you know, Canada or the U.S. Or it's just, it's all over the globe. That's one thing I love about filmmaking, is a global thing. Everyone's making something.
And, I mean, yeah, I mean, this year, I mean, just from the 10 films we've announced thus far, I mean, we'll talk about that in a moment or so, but there's definitely, you know, kind of spans the globe. You know, we got some films from Japan, from New Zealand, from Canada, of course. There's, you know, a bit of something for everybody, I think.
Yeah, that's actually one thing I do say every year for someone who's never, say, been to Toronto After Dark. I always say that there's a misconception that we're strictly a horror festival, which is not true. We're a genre festival.
Genre festival.
We play a lot of genre different things. Like you said, we're a cult action or science fiction does really well with us. We play a little bit of everything for someone. Like, if you go to the festival, you don't necessarily have to see every movie, but I'm sure there's one film in our lineup that you will like, you will enjoy, or you would like to see. That's one thing I like to say every year.
I had an inkling that you guys got a lot of submissions, but I did not have any clue there was, you know, 600, and to try and, you know, whittle down 600 films to about 30 or so.
Yeah.
Must be
in terms of features, I think this year we had, I'll give you a rough idea, because this is, remember, this is including submitted films plus the ones that we go after ourselves.
Right.
I'd say probably looking at around, like, features, probably around 350, which is a lot for us.
Right.
I know some other festivals like Sundance or Penn in France, they're looking at like 1,000 to 2,000. Like, it's crazy. Like, it's huge.
Yeah, but they're also getting films, you know, like major studio. I mean, you know, we're looking at more,
of
like,
course, yeah.
Sort of,
of course, yeah.
For lack of a better term, indie films, right?
Correct. Yeah. Definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But so for I'm happy. I don't know how people. And we don't have the team. Like, we got 1,000 films in a year. We need a bigger team. We'd have to have a year-round submission. We'd have to open up submissions for next year's festival, probably, you know, in November.
Right,
after
right.
We finish this year. So, yeah.
So so this question, I mean, you know, I'd love it if you could answer it. If you want to plead the fifth, you know, I understand. But has there been one for you personally that got away? Like, one film you really, really championed, you wanted in the fest, and for some reason or another, you were outvoted?
Because it happens every year. This year, not so much. Actually, no, there was one film that, I'm not going to mention who it was. What the film was, or who the director is. I just don't think that's fair.
Right.
But there was a film that I usually every year do a tracking list. I do basically a spreadsheet, and when I'm going to do a lot of, I don't call it research. It sounds too scientific. I'm just like, I love film. I've loved film my entire life. I'm a big business guy too. So I've been involved in this business long enough that to me, a daily read is basically, you know, the major publications such as The Hollywood Reporter and Variety, plus all the genre stuff like Bloody Disgusting, Dread Central, Twitch, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And plus I'm reading stuff on home media, like Home Media Magazine, you know, like I read up on a lot of stuff because I got to know everything. So when I hear about a genre film, I add it to my list. Whether it's good or bad, I usually just write title, director, country, you know, general synopsis, IMDb links, that kind of thing. And I keep track of stuff. And there's been a couple of films over a few years. Like last year, we had a film called Wormwood. I don't know if you caught it.
I've seen it, yep. Loved it, yep.
Wormwood is one of my favorite films of last year. Actually, it was my favorite film of last year. on at the premiere, because I've been tracking it for 3 years. And I'm glad that I liked the movie, because I hadn't seen the film until last June, because it wasn't finished yet. And the world premiere was at Fantastic Fest last September, and then we had the Canadian premiere in October. This year, there was a film that I've been tracking for about 2 years, three years. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because there was a trailer for it that came out around February of last year. And I was like, whoa, what's this? I'm not even going to tell you what kind of film it is. And but it was like right up my alley. It's something that I like. And of course, I do think of our audience. I know what our cat audience likes. And I'm thinking, yeah, this will work. So I added it to my list, and I, you know, contacted the director. And after looking at this film for Toronto After Dark last year, but it just wasn't ready. And then going into this year, you add it to this year's spreadsheet, and I'm like, okay, following up. And any news on the film? Is it done? And we had some correspondence, and we literally didn't get a screener until, wow, it was like just over a month ago. It was really tight for deadlines. But we wanted to take a look at it. And unfortunately, I'm not going to tell you why we didn't choose it, but just unfortunately we didn't choose it. So.
Well, before we talk about the films that have been announced thus far for this year, I want to talk about films from festivals past. I mean, I have some of my favorites. For example, Poltergeist was an incredible screening. Repo: The Genetic Opera. I remember seeing Black Dynamite at TAG.
Oh, yeah.
Wand of the Dead was quite incredible. American Mary. I mean, it goes on and on. Of course, last year you guys had The Babadook, which is you know, one of my favorite films from last year. What films from After Dark Past would you say are some of your favorites?
That's a great question. You brought us some really good ones. I personally am not a big trauma guy, so I know Adam. People do bring up Poltergeist. People had a lot of fun at that screening. I wasn't there for that one.
It was a great screening. There's a lot of walkouts, which in my opinion is the mark of a great film. If you're going to offend, you know, a segment of the audience, they're going to walk out. But yeah, it was a fun screening.
Yeah, I know Adam still brings that up. He says, you know, it went over really well. And, you know, he likes that film, which is really good. Trying to think, going back because it's 10 years, that's a lot of films. I think if you think about it, we've shown probably like what 150 to 200 movies by then. Mm-hmm. So, going back recently, see, like I love Babadook. I think Babadook was one of the stronger genre films of 2015 period. It had an amazing festival run throughout the world. However, I'm partial to Wormwood, of course, like I mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
But there was something about Australians, because both titles are Australian. Australian filmmakers are making genre films, and I think they're getting a lot more funding from like Screen Australia, and getting a little bit. I know Wormwood was like that because it was 100% indie. And then they finally landed some government money, kind of like their own. It's kind of like Screen Australia is kind of like their Telefilm Canada.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because they needed help for post, so they actually got some post completion money from Screen Australia to finish it. But apart from that, it was a 100% independent film that was shot on weekends, basically over the course of 3 years, shot with any kind of camera they could use. I think they used 6 cameras on that film. So that's something that amazes me. And then Housebound. Did you catch Housebound last year?
Oh, I did, yeah. Actually, yeah, that was a New Zealand production.
New Zealand film, yep. Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really like that one, and we have a New Zealand film this year. But I really like that one. It's page 20. I'm just going to look at my... It's hard to figure out every year. I know when I came on as a programmer in 2011, I was responsible for the world premiere of War of the Dead. That was a film I was tracking for about 3 years. I really enjoy those. I'm a sucker for sort of Nazi film, yak.
Mm-hmm.
So, and World War II, so, yeah. And one of my favorite films that year was actually Some Guy Who Kills People. We actually had a Sunday screening, and it was a last-minute edition. It was actually an additional screening. I think we did 20 screenings that year. Usually we do 19.
Mm-hmm.
But it was such a great lineup that year. We wanted to include it, even though it had a really crappy spot to put it in, like Sunday afternoon at 1 o'clock. But it was a great turnout, surprisingly, because, you know, trying to dark at lunchtime. But it's a dark comedy. I don't know if you saw that. I don't know if you've even seen it. It's a fantastic film. You should watch it. So I'm a big fan of Ryan Levin, who's the writer and producer on it. It's brutally sarcastic. his writing. His writing is just so witty and intelligent. I just love it. 2012, trying to think. Oh, yeah, I was responsible for a resolution from Justin Benson and Aaron Moorhead, who did Spring, who I played Tiff last year.
Spring was incredible.
I really liked that film. It was just something I hadn't seen before. It's just something that clicked with that movie. It's not, I wouldn't say it's necessarily my cup of tea, but I would go, oh, yeah, this movie's great. It really spoke to me. I really, really liked it. And I remember getting the screener from Aaron, actually, and he said in his note, he actually said, and don't forget to laugh. And I'm like, it's a comedy. And it is. It has this weird sense of humor to it. 2013, I think I was probably best. I really loved I programmed Motivational Growth.
Ah, yes. Yep. That's a good one.
I don't know if you were there for the screening. We had the longest Q&A I've ever done. It was like 45 minutes. Because Don Thacker is going... is playing the character on stage. There's a reason why he's won an award for best Q&A. trying to think, Cheap Thrills, I really like that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the Machine. I really love The Machine. That's a science fiction film out of the UK, which I really loved. Loved that film. Going back in the past. Yeah, Repo Junior Grand Prix, that was a good example, too. You know, I'm not really into those type of films, but that movie was a lot of fun. Black Dynamite, another good example. Oh, I love that movie. That was so fun.
That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, there's just a lot of movies that you can picture watching that at home versus watching in an audience of like 400 or 500 people. Like you could watch like just I'll take Black Diamond. Dynamite. You probably back then there was actually a video store and you could rent the DVD or Blu-ray and bring it home, watch it, and it wouldn't have the same effect watching on your own or watching with a couple buddies or your family even, and as opposed to going to a festival like Front After Dark and sitting with an audience and watching Black Dynamite on the big screen where it should be seen. And laughing your ass off, and having a good time, and having a lot of fun.
And that's the thing too, because I mean, there is something to be said about it. We're losing it more and more, every year. But just that communal experience of, being in a cinema with like-minded people, and watching something that resonates with everybody, and just having an amazing time. Whether you're laughing, whether you're scared, whether you're emotionally involved, it's just that and that's something because there's this sort of community that's built around Toronto After Dark. You really do get that real sense of. Communal atmosphere. So yeah, I mean, it's
like sharing the love of everything that everybody loves, and I think everybody loves movies. It brings people together, and I think it's just great that the people who are coming to Toronto After Dark to see, like this year we'll see Nina Forever. Like obviously it's a different kind of film, or like I'll stick on these like Tales of Halloween, and they know what they're kind of gonna mean. They know what to expect, I think, but they're there and everyone's kind of wanting and. And that friendships have been made. I've met new friends, and actually the people I pretty much keep in touch with nowadays are all people because of Toronto After Dark. And we've had a couple get engaged for Toronto After Dark, and now they have a baby, and it's like a family. I hate to use the word, and that community is really good, but it's like almost like a family. Like everybody trusts the programming, and it's one thing I like every year is because, 2 weeks now, 2 weeks from now, I get to see faces I haven't seen in a while. So to me, the important part is to make sure those faces are having a good time and everyone's looked after and everyone's screening the experience is great, because it's supposed to go into like a typical movie night where it could get ruined by some guy on his phone. We don't have that problem.
Right.
There's something about film festivals, not necessarily Toronto After Dark, but like every film festival I've been to, which isn't that many, but there's something about film festivals where they respect the process. Like they know that, the etiquette of just going to a film festival and, not taking out your phone and not being a jerk, not being a Susie seat kicker and all that stuff.
Yep, and I totally get what you're saying about the friendships being made. So, because genre fans are the most passionate fans, and we love to talk about our passions. So, as a festival goer myself, there's been many times I've been staying in line for a film, and sometimes I'll be with somebody, sometimes I even go by myself, and I'll just start up a conversation with someone behind me, and before you know it, we're just chatting about film for hours and hours. So there really is a real sense of community that springs up around genre films and the festival.
Well, it reminds me a little bit what video stores are like. It's something I worked in a video store for 9 years of my life, and you had customers coming by and they just, you get to know them, and they weren't just like fanboys. I used to know like family, like husbands and fathers, and they would come by and they would know that I would always be working, and I would spend time with them. Like I wasn't big, I didn't go to school for film. I with my coworkers about movies. We we close up shop, we clean up, and we'd sit and chat just for after the end of the day, we'd just shoot the shit for like an hour or two, just talking about maybe a filmmaker they weren't aware of, or something that, or a movie project that's coming down the pipeline. And I think that's missing today because the internet makes us so disconnected.
Exactly.
So that in a way, film festivals are the only way to kind of bring people together again. It's just like, I'm not going to really talk to somebody online. Well, I do anyway, but not, like, it's not the same. It's just something that's missing. And even going to the movies now, it's not like it was when we were younger. People just, they're so distracted. I think a lot of the, not a lot, but some people who go to the movies just go, and then they're not really watching the movie. They're just there to kill time, but they paid $12 to do it.
Yep, we can go on and on and on about, the difference between then and now. I mean, I too worked in a video store, and I have some of the same stories as you. In fact, I was working in a video store. I mean, I live in Toronto now, and I used to work in a video store in the burbs. I would close the store, 1 in the morning, drive in the city to an all-night video store to rent, more obscure genre films that I was discussing with my coworkers, and then I would have, strike up a huge conversation with the person behind the counter. Just as you're saying, like, my whole life did and still does revolve around film. And, whether it's the sampling of movies now, like, people don't watch movies anymore. They sample it on Netflix or whatever. I mean, it's just not the same. So, yeah.
And it's also this discovery. It's like, because I live in Burlington, I remember when, Peter Jackson's Dead Alive came out, I drove to a Hollywood Video in Mississauga. And, because I heard, it came out on video, and I heard, this is before the internet. I heard about this movie, and it's like, I gotta go rent this movie. And of course, I rented it. Same with like when I discovered John Woo and Hard Boiled in '92. I was like, I heard, oh my god, this Hong Kong action director. And a buddy of mine came over, and we rented USC like #2 and Hard Boiled. And we watched Hard Boiled. We were like, holy crap, what is this? Like, it just changed our whole outlook on action film.
Yeah, it's so funny. Like, you're talking about language, because I mean, the store that I actually went, when I worked at the video store and then went to the other, it was After Dark Video, I believe it was called. Do you remember that store?
No. I worked for Jumbo Video.
Hey, free popcorn.
Yeah, I still got scars from that.
Well, listen, one thing I say about Jumbo, they had a great horror room.
We had the Horror Castle, we called it, and then we demoed it, and it became the Game Castle, and it became the Horror Castle.
I remember seeing the boxer for Blood Feast the first time in that horror room. I was about 8 and turning over and like just seeing this like lurid stuff scaring the absolute shit out of me. And
it's weird because growing up, because I wasn't a horror, like growing up, I did an interview last year where like I didn't like horror movies growing up as a kid. I was scared of them and they scared me.
Me too.
And like I was an action, but I have a sucker for monsters, dinosaurs, and action films. And I met my best friend through high school, and recently he was into horror film though. He really liked Clive Barker, like when Hellraiser came out in '87. And also through the '90s, we'd go see horror films like Wes Craven stuff, obviously, and the early '90s stuff, which kind of was just different. He kind of introduced me to a lot because I wasn't really. I'd watch the Friday. The studio stuff, like the Nightmare on Elm Street and the Friday the 13th and the Halloween, probably at that point it was probably Halloween 4. But that's it. It was just like, it really wasn't, horror movies weren't really a staple of my diet. I was more of an action guy, more than anything else. But like, I just got into, I think I got more into horror films when DVDs came out, more or less. Because DVD, I don't know about you, but when DVD came out, like, I had my own DVD business, and when they exploded online, like, I had an internet business, and that opened my world, like, my mind to more cinema than I knew was out there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, with Jumbo, we had a lot of movies there, and when DVD came out, it was, like, not only just, like, the current stuff, it was also the classics, as well as foreign, like, stuff I'd never even heard of, and I was like, wow.
Yeah, no, that was an incredible time. Yeah, it's so funny. Like, it's all because I too was terrified as a young kid. I mean, I wouldn't even go see Nightmare on Elm Street. If I was at some sort of slumber party and they were playing it, I'd run out of the room screaming. And then in my early 20s, when I started working at this video store, I said, you know what, I'm going to desensitize myself. And I think it was Friday the 13th, part 4. And I took it home, and I put it in, and I was watching, and I was sweating profusely, and scared of my mother. I got through it, and, you know, and there was this, like, feeling that I conquered something, and all of a sudden I wanted more. And then this sort of coincided with the DVD boom, and then I'm hearing about, you know, these filmmakers, like, you know, the Italians in particular, like, you know, your Argentos, your Fulcis, etc., and making pilgrimages. And when I was going to the store that I was telling you about, I mean, the movies I was looking for was specifically Braindead, Meet the Feebles, Bad Taste.
Meet the Feebles. Oh my god, bring it back, memories. Yep. I remember meeting a guy, this will blow your mind, when the internet was like 95. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And remember CompuServe?
Yep.
Do you remember that? I met a guy, we're still friends today, and he gave me a bootleg. That's the whole thing about discovering, which we kind of spoiled. Like, I get fed up with a billion trailers and a billion TV spots nowadays because I'm a marketer as well, and it's like less is more. Mm-hmm. And I get so turned off now with just marketing. It just takes away that, you know, I only need to see like one trailer. I'm like, yeah, I'm good.
Yeah.
I don't need to see like 18. I'm good. I'm one is perfectly fine. Because it's probably going to be a movie I will see anyway. Like, I just heard there was a trailer number 3 or 4 for The Martian, which opens tomorrow. And I'm like, I don't need another trailer. I'm already going to go see it.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember discovering, it's like, yeah, Meet the Feeble. That's another great example, because after Dead Alive, I don't know which one came first. I think Meet the Feeble was first. I don't remember. But it was like, my buddy was like, I got this taped VHS off a Japanese Laserdisc. That was the days when, like, it was okay, like, piracy is kind of frowned upon, but we didn't have the internet. The way we pirated, in a way, was taping off TV or taping off Super Channel in the day. Like, I think it was the movie network or the movie, I can't remember the name, or just trying to
hooking up two VCRs together, that sort of thing, yeah.
Or the bypassing the macrovision on the VHS.
Exactly.
But that's how we discovered stuff. Mm-hmm. That's what I actually really, really miss the most. It's just, I think we're just too spoiled nowadays, and that's why you take something about Tron After Dark, where we're inundated with, you know, studio stuff. And that's why a lot of these films, you know, going back to the film, like they won't play your local Cineplex, because Cineplex pretty much owns a lot of, pretty much all the cinemas in Canada. But, you know, like, where I live in Burlington, like a movie like Wormwood is not going to play Burlington. Mm-hmm. As much as I would love it to, it's not going to play Burlington. They played Toronto, but it didn't play Burlington. However, on the flip side, you take something like It Follows, and what's the other one? Ex Machina. That actually got a decent theatrical run, and even in Canada, through Mongrel, It Follows, even, like, Ex Machina, I could see play Burlington. It Follows, I'm like, there's no way that's going to play Burlington, but it did for like 3 weeks, and so I'm like, oh my god. But meanwhile, you're thinking, oh my god, I'm going to go see this, because it'll be gone in a week, because it probably won't last. And surprisingly, it played here for about 3 weeks. Yeah. And but I know the audience here in Burlington, and they're kind of just, they don't like movies like that. They like their studio fodder stuff. And I remember sitting in an audience and people just laughing at it and just going, what the hell is this? The same as like when Drive came out, Refn's film, and it was like, and people just like, what, that they wanted a refund? And I'm like, what? This movie's amazing. I love Drive.
But I do too.
Yeah, it's like, I'm a big Refn fan, but it's just like, what? But I can see why they don't like it. That's the thing. I know why people don't like stuff. Mm. But that's the whole thing about film festivals. Like, film festivals, you should go to these festivals because you're going to see something that you will probably, A, you didn't expect to see, and B, you should come out to see it, because sometimes a lot of these films you will never get picked up.
Right.
It's a little bit different now because of Netflix and VOD and that, but a lot of these films sometimes just kind of just disappear because there's a lot of product out there.
Mm-hmm. And you'll never forget the experience. I mean, if it's a film you love, I mean, because of, you know, as I said before, like, you know, you're with an incredible audience of like-minded fans, like, that too is just, you know, you're never, okay, I saw this incredible movie with incredible people, and that was just one of those, you know, theatrical experiences that will stay with me forever. So, talking about this year's lineup, I mean, we have 10 films announced so far. Totally excited to hear the rest of the, you know, the lineup. But you mentioned Nina Forever. That's one I do want to see. I mean, I heard great things about it coming out of Montreal.
Yeah. I saw it in Montreal. No, I didn't. I saw a screen of it. I wanted to see Montreal because I wanted to see it on the big screen, which I haven't seen on the big screen. Personally, I love the film. I think it's great. It's a movie that actually, ironically, goes back to one of your earlier questions about dividing the programming team. That's the movie that divided the programming team. I won't tell you why, but I know it's kind of a split. Some of us love it, some of us like it, and some of us admire it. I like the film. Have you seen the trailer? I'm assuming you've read up on it.
I've read up on it, and somebody who, and that's sort of like an influential figure, you know, whose taste I respect 1,000% is a big booster of the film. So I'm really
amazing. Yeah. It's a movie. I'm thrilled that we're playing it. It's not a movie that necessarily speaks to our audience, but I'm hoping that everyone comes out to see it. We usually play one or two or three films every year that we don't necessarily know how it's going to play. This is one of those films. It doesn't necessarily say, yeah, you got to come see this movie. Last year we had Kumiko,
mm-hmm.
Which is a programming team we unanimously like, but we all agreed that it's going to be a very divisive film. It's going to split the audience. Some people are going to probably like it. Some people will hate it. Some people will probably be mixed on it. And that's okay. That's what I like about film anyway. Everyone's got an opinion. But this year, yeah, Nina Forever, it could be that film. It's a British film. It's about, I sum it up as this. It's kind of, it's a very weird sort of Three's Company episode where you have a character who, they have two characters, a male and female. I forget the character's name. It's been a while since I've seen it. But they both work at a grocery store. And she has a crush on him, but she knows that he's dealing with the loss of his girlfriend who was killed in a motorcycle accident. And he's also a bit of a depressed individual who tried to kill himself. So it's this empathy. So she has a sort of a bond, a weird bond with him. But they get together. They hit it off. They get together. However, every time they're together, I'll use that term lightly, his dead ex-girlfriend comes back to life. So it makes it for a very strange sort of three-way kind of relationship. however, what I love about the film, it's incredibly, it's that dark comedy which speaks to me.
Mm-hmm.
It is incredibly, it's funny, but it's also very touching, and I found it incredibly sexy at the same time. It spoke to me from a really, really, really weird reason. I really love this film. It's something I hadn't seen before.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thrilled that we're playing it. It's two British brothers, the Blaine brothers, and the movie is getting some amazing reviews from various film festivals, like you mentioned, Fantasia. And I'm glad, thrilled that we have it. I'm so happy that we have it.
Well, now you got me more excited to see it. You got a couple films. If I'm not mistaken, you have two films from Sion Sono, right?
Yes, yes. I haven't seen either one. I'll be completely honest with you. I know our programming team loves both. However, it's interesting because some of them like one more than the other, even though they're both Sono films. They're both very different films. I know a little bit about them. I know I've seen half an hour of one and I haven't seen the other. I've seen a little bit of Love and Peace because I heard about it from Fantasia. I know so many people that saw it at Fantasia. Wow. So it's going to be a very interesting screening.
It's funny, you know, it's because when you said it, like, I mean, you know, because the other solo film is Tag, and it seems to me like, I mean, in a lot of ways, solo is becoming the new Takeshi Miike. I mean, Miike is becoming more mainstream, whereas Sono is kind of, you know, pick up that mantle, you know? It's sort of like the, you know, provocative.
Yeah, Sono has, I think he had 4 films this year, mm-hmm. and 2 were playing Tad. His other film, I forget the name of it, played Kiss this year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he has one that's either been out already, came out earlier this year, or it's coming out. So he has 4 films. Takashi Miike is the same way. I think he had, like, 3 or 4 films. He had 1 film that played Midnight Madness this year.
Yeah, yeah.
Or Vanguard, I don't remember which one. Mm-hmm. I didn't go to TIFF this year, unfortunately. But yeah, it's interesting. I find it's fascinating to watch filmmakers who pump out a movie every few years and filmmakers who pump them out several times a year.
Oh yeah, no. I mean, these guys are like, totally prolific, and it's insane. Like, I mean, you know what they come up with. Not only are they putting out a lot of films, but like just like the imagination and what comes out of their brains are just like unbelievable. So, yeah, those are two singular individuals. Two other films that I'm really looking forward to. One of them is your opening film, Tales of Halloween. I mean, that's getting some great. I mean, there was, I think, in this month's Room Org, they reviewed it and gave it a fantastic write up.
And it's solid. It's a, you know, I think anthologies are kind of back.
Yep.
And I think everyone's sort of catching a wind how well sort of the ABCs of Death have done.
Mm-hmm.
We had ABCs of Death 2, what was it, last year? Yeah. Yeah, so like I say, like it's been 10 years there. Sometimes it's a blur which year, sometimes which films fall into. Yeah, this is it's sort of Tales from Halloween, from what I understand, was birthed by Neil Marshall's, I believe it's his wife, Axel Caroline, and she had this idea for sort of in another anthology, and you have such directors as Neil Marshall did a segment, Darren Lynn Houseman, who did the original Saw, mm-hmm. as well as Rebuilding the Opera,
yep. mm-hmm.
He does a segment. You have Mike Mendez, who did Big Ass Spiders, that's his most recent film. We had that attached in 2012. Paul Soleil, which you haven't heard from in a while, he did a movie called Grace, which I really liked the tad in 2010. If you saw that, the zombie baby film.
No, that one I haven't seen. No,
you should track that down. It's amazing. Yeah. I think Anchor Bay put it out on DVD. It's so good. And Lucky McKee,
right?
The woman, which
the woman,
had
yep.
2011, I think as well. Mm-hmm. So, and there's 10 segments, and I saw it for the first time in Montreal. So and with an audience of like what 700 people, so it was a blast. So I had a lot of fun with this movie. Sometimes anthologies don't work. Some of this, you know, it's obviously I can see a lot of people loving some. It's interesting. It's hard because you know they're gonna love some segments over others.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I love about it. But it's also good for discussion. That's what I like about it because you have 10 little mini movies in one big movie.
Yeah, I mean the nature of one thing I do love about anthology is the fact that like you know okay so. Yeah, maybe, you know, you may like some more than others. I mean, you look at, like, something like ABCs of Death. I mean, some of the segments might have fallen a bit flat for me, but other ones were just absolutely incredible. But what I hear, so there is always going to be, if you don't like a little segment, hey, it's not a whole film, right? Just wait a few more minutes and something else is coming up. What I've read about Tales of Halloween is that the segments go, and this is, I'm paraphrasing from the review I read, from great to really great. So apparently there's not one bump segment in the bunch.
I really enjoyed it. It worked for me. So, you know, I'm glad that we have it at Toronto Dark. So I can't wait for the audience to see it as well. So, yeah, I'm thrilled, yeah.
But I gotta
it
say...
It worked for me. I was happier.
I gotta say, the one film that I'm most looking forward to, I mean, you know, this is talk about a film from New Zealand, Deathgasm. This is the movie I have to see.
Yeah, and I was told not to watch it. So, I haven't seen it because I'm like you, I can't wait to see it. There's not really much to sell you on this film. If you've seen the trailer, I think somebody released a clip online, which I will not watch because I don't need to watch clips. But it's metal horror. I don't think we've seen that in a while.
No, I mean, my mind is blank right now, but that there was that Japanese movie. It was based on an anime. Do you remember?
Oh,
Detroit. Was it Detroit?
No.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. I think Gene Simmons was in it. He had a cameo or something, and...
Oh, really? Okay. Remember that one from the 80s? He had the kid, the guy from, like, Family Ties.
Oh, but, yeah, Trick or Treat with Simmons and Ozzy Osbourne, and yeah.
But yeah, this looks a lot of fun. I've seen the trailer. I've read up a lot of time, probably read the reviews like you. It's a metal horror about these, I guess the unleashed demon, and, you know, they have to basically save the world. So that's pretty much the snapshot. But it's from the producer of Housebound, like, his name is Ann Simpson, and he's a very well-renowned producer. And I can't wait to see it. I think, you know, there's something about Ozzy and Kiwi filmmakers, so I'm looking forward to seeing this one.
I wonder if this one...
It's a closing night film, so what,
yep.
What perfect way to go out on our 10th years with a little bit of metal horror comedy.
I wonder if this was going to harken back to Rock and Roll Nightmare, one of the great Canadian classics.
Oh, wow. Yeah, wow. Because he has a documentary. Thor has a documentary. I Am Thor. They play Kiss. They play Fantasia.
Really?
Yeah, it's called I Am Thor. You should check it out. I haven't seen it.
I was unaware, and I'm dying to...
I Am Thor.
Totally look forward to seeing that. Now that
you should look it up. Maybe you could... you should probably get an interview. He came to Montreal. I didn't see the film there, I'd love to see that.
Yeah, good.
I heard it was really great.
Good old John Michael. That's awesome. Fantastic. Well, I gotta say, I mean, like I said before, I mean, the slate thus far looks incredible, and I can't wait to hear what else you got in store for us this year. And I'm sure I'll be seeing you in a lot of these screenings, so thank you so much for chatting with us.
No, thanks so much. I appreciate you having me on. Thank you.